Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm filling in this week for Joy Cardine. This hour, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel columnist Eugene Kane is my guest, and we're talking about a report from last week that says the Reverend Al Sharpton is, quote, taking the black community's support for granted when it comes to Senator Barack Obama. And we'll be discussing what the so-called black vote is and whether the mere discussion of the topic elevates the subject in any way. Your calls on the subject are welcome as well. What did you think of Reverend Sharpton's comments? Are they as simple as jealousy of some people have said? Or, as others have argued, do they indicate a Reverend Sharpton who is mired in the past and someone whose relevance is fading? And does any of this really affect what the candidates themselves do or say? Join us at 800-642-1234 if you'd like to be part of the discussion. Or if you're calling from Madison, you can phone us at 263-1890. Email is another way to get in touch if you'd like. Our address there is talk@wpr.org. Eugene Kane, good morning and welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. You write a lot about bigotry and discrimination in your columns, and actually you wrote a column earlier in the month about suitors. The headline was Suitors Are Lining Up for Black Voters, about Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And I guess when you first heard the announcement that Senator Obama was going to be running for president in 2008, did you anticipate, did you sort of mentally start lining up the columns that you were going to be writing as the election got underway, as the campaign season got going?
Well, I guess I anticipated writing about him more in the future because I think when I went about a few weeks after he announced, I'm not really sure what the time frame is, but he had been in Milwaukee just that recently during the November, I guess the midterms, he was stumping for Democratic candidates here. And that was the first time I actually got to see him in person. I guess it was, you know, months after November. But my sense was then that, you know, the guy's a comer. So, you know, I had already sort of experienced what it is to see that Obama mania firsthand. So, yeah, I did pretty much know that if he got into the race, we'd be writing about him a lot.
So did you anticipate that you'd be writing about things like this, Reverend Al Sharpton accusing him of taking the black vote for granted? Is that a direction? I can't imagine it's a direction you're happy to see the discussion going in.
Well, I don't necessarily. I mean, the reports that I've seen have basically suggested that because Sharpton is getting, you know, badgered with a lot of questions about will he support Obama, he basically said that he wasn't making any decision and he was going to withhold an endorsement, not necessarily just by him, but by his group. There's an action coalition or something in New York City that is basically Sharpton's national organization. And he might have, you know, said I think he basically warns everybody not to take the black vote for granted. So I didn't see it as personal an attack as a lot of people are making it out to be. And it didn't surprise me because, I mean, when you talk about blacks in the Democratic Party, that is essentially what any candidate or maverick candidate like Sharpton, when he was running for president, that was another theme that he always used to return to. Don't take the black vote for granted. So.
And in your column on March 6th that was published in the Journal Sentinel, you talked about the race that for black candidates right now isn't clear-cut. And you see that as a very good thing. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that for a bit, because at one point in your column, you refer to donkeys and diversity, and you're referring to the Democratic Party. And they've sort of got the lock on diversity in some regards now. But I'm wondering necessarily, and if you could just talk about sort of the premise behind that column, and we can kind of go from there.
Well, it is. Well, once Obama gets in the race, a lot of people will see that already as a lot of diversity. But then when you consider that he's going up against Hillary Clinton, who is a female, and Bill Richardson, who's Hispanic, I mean, that is basically, I've been following politics, you know, for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a field where potentially your strongest candidates are all going to be so-called minorities. Even a white female would be included as a minority in that sort of, you know, in that sort of equation. So my sense is that it is exciting. And for African Americans, it's really exciting because unlike candidates like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and even Alan Keyes or one time on the Republican side, these are serious. I mean, Obama is being considered, it might be a little fast, but he is certainly being considered a front-running, serious, quote, with quotes around it, black candidate, meaning that this is a guy who actually could win it. I don't think many people really thought that about Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. But along with that comes the idea that he's also an unknown to a lot of people. He's a political neophyte in a lot of ways on the national stage. So the inference being, is he going to be, is it a lock yet that he will be the de facto favorite of most black voters, which is the thing that I think the Sharpton controversy kind of comes out of. There's still a question. There's a question because there's suspicion and cynicism on some black voters because Barack Obama has been, you know, sort of vaulted to the front of the crowd in a lot of ways, and there are a lot of black voters who are naturally suspicious when that happens because they're wondering, you know, if all these predominantly white people who have basically, you know, lined up to say that, you know, that Obama is their choice. What is that about? Is that because they feel, you know, Obama won't be as, for lack of any other, you know, terminology, as pro-black as maybe Sharpton and Jackson would? Or is it because they think, you know, because he's biracial, that means he's not really totally black? There's a lot of interesting dynamics to work out as this thing goes on. But at this point, I think it's good because Hillary Clinton, due to her affiliation with Bill Clinton, also can lay a claim to the black vote. John Edwards, because of being a Southerner who has had some, you know, ties with Southern politicians and African Americans in his community, has some ties to the black vote. I can't remember another field where it really laid itself out like that.
And talk about those ties that Hillary Clinton and John Edwards have to the black vote, because, you know, there is this perception, I think, among some people that the only tie the black vote needs sometimes is an African-American candidate.
Well, that could be. I mean, I think I've always held that there's nothing wrong with people voting for their own kind. I think if a lot of Italian-Americans vote for Rudy Giuliani, it won't be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
If Joe Lieberman had run for president and got the majority of the Jewish vote, that wouldn't have been a big deal. With black people, it always seems to, you know, they want to, you know, I guess put another layer on that. But my sense is that Hillary is really, John Edwards, just being a white Southerner, I think, and I've met him before, and I know he understands sort of how to go into a black church and talk and campaign, so he'd be strong there. Hillary's recent experiences in black churches hasn't been all that great, but what Hillary brings is, you know, Bill Clinton, and there's always that, you know, the kind of tired joke about him being the first black president.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, what can't be discounted is that over 8 years, he built up a network of support in the black community. There are a lot of black politicians and bureaucrats who basically owe their career to Bill Clinton. So Hillary, of course, you know, her thing, I think the real person who could be accused or could be warned not to take the black vote for granted is going to be Hillary Clinton. It's not going to be Barack Obama.
Interesting twist. We're talking with Eugene Cain this hour. He is a columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're discussing comments attributed to the Reverend Al Sharpton last week, who warned Senator Barack Obama not to take the black vote for granted. And we'll be looking for your comments on this as well. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number you can use if you'd like to be part of the discussion. Otherwise, you can call us from Madison at 263-1890. And don't forget, you can also join us by email if you don't have time to make a call. Our address is talk@wpr.org. We'll be getting to your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 20 minutes past 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this week. Coming up after 4, At Issue with Peter Donalds, anti-war demonstrations around the globe and here in Wisconsin continue as this week marks the 4th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Peter Donalds' guest after 4 will be making the case for peace. That's coming up after 4 o'clock this afternoon here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, Eugene Kane, a columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, is our guest, and we're talking about Senator Barack Obama and the so-called black vote in the race for president in 2008. Let's go directly to the phones right now. John joins us, and he is in Burlington this morning. Hi, John.
Good morning. My comment is, I think the whole notion, to me, is just a little... I guess the black vote in itself just seems like I'm a white male, and I don't know where, you know, people expect my white vote to go to, but it really, you know, I'm hoping that I'm not voting for a white man this time, and I think the issue should really drive it rather than, you know, everybody talking about, well, what the black vote is when, you know, Obama may say the same thing that all the white men say to get elected and not do anything differently, and I think... It's really kind of the premise is kind of silly to a point, I think.
All right, John, thanks for the call. Eugene Kane, that is an issue, I guess, that comes up now and again. And it sounds idealistic, though, to vote for someone based strictly on the issues. But is it too idealistic to hope for that?
Well, I don't think it's too idealistic, but I also caution, you know, people being in denial about what the reality of American politics and race has been. I mean, I would love... the idea that, you know, white people don't really think of their vote as a white vote, but I would challenge white voters out there. How many white voters have ever voted for anybody other than a white person for president? So, I mean, you know, that's not a condemning thing. That's just the reality of it. We're at a time now where these three Democratic minority candidates will be the first time most American voters have a choice to vote for somebody who's not a white male. So in that sense, the racial component is understandable because it's a new thing for people. The black vote itself can be identified because, as most people know, I mean, it's been a predominantly Democratic vote for, you know, the last 25, 30, maybe even 40 years. So there are some racial realities that, you know, to look at. And I think when white people say they don't really think about race, it's not good to... I always understand it because my sense is that white people don't really have to think about race that much. Sometimes minorities in America do, though.
And one of the words you brought up there, Republicans, is one that we haven't heard a lot in this conversation so far. Where are the Republicans going to figure into this campaign in 2008 in regards to minority votes and regarding to black votes? Are they going to be a presence?
Well, I mean, that's another conversation.
Oh, sure.
My sense has always been that if the Democratic Party does really line up all these strong minority candidates, female, Hispanic, African-American, and then get to a point where they come up with some sort of even dream ticket for the 21st century, which is either two non-traditional, you know, maybe it'll be a woman and an African-American running for president and vice president, maybe it'll be the other way around. In that sense, I think if Republicans basically come up with the standard, you know, white male, it's going to look, you know, sort of like one party's going towards the future and one party isn't. But again, I know Republicans who will come back with, you know, Bush's record of, you know, hiring Condoleezza and Colin Powell and now Albert Gonzalez. But like I've often told people, when you see how a lot of these high-ranking minorities, all of them excellent people who've been promoted by Bush, when you see that how they've been treated by this administration, I don't know if that's necessarily all that much of a positive or not so far. So
let's go to Victor, who joins us from Milwaukee this morning. Hi, Victor.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Kane.
Good morning.
On one hand, I like what Al Sharpton did. He's challenging Barack Obama to don't take our vote for granted, which, you know, his speech should be held to the fire like any other candidate. On the other hand, I would put the onus on the black community because what's happening is we follow the Democratic Party like a messiah complex. You know, they're going to cure our social ills and everything. And too many of us don't hold the Democratic Party's feet to the fire, you know, ask them challenging questions and intelligent questions, because if they're in office, you know, what are they going to do for us, or what have they done for us? You know, what you see around, you still see a high black incarceration rate inside the prisons. We're still highly unemployed. You know, our education system is, you know, at the bottom. So you look at what's going on and what the Democratic Party has done for us over the last 20 years, you know, you got to ask yourself a question, what have they done for us? So until we start challenging the Democratic Party and holding their feet to the fire, then, you know, nothing's going to change for us. So we need to start thinking for ourselves and, you know, what our alternative party is out there for us. Maybe it's the Republican Party, maybe it's not. But my thing is we need to start thinking for ourselves and quit looking for black leaders like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson to think for us.
Victor, thanks for the call. Eugene Kane.
Well, again, that's the window that's being opened with all these choices on the Democratic side. And once we get this thing figured out who the black vote will go for, then that does become a bargaining chip. I can easily see this sort of competition for black votes between Hillary and Barack Obama leading into the kind of real leverage that the caller is talking about. I mean, we're getting back to the idea, who's taking the black vote for granted? If you actually need the black vote to win, as I think most parties always do when they won, the Democratic Party has always needed the black vote to win, this might be the year to actually start to get some concessions for that kind of power. But, again, like he's saying, that's going to be the responsibility of black voters, or rather not just voters, but the political leaders within the black community, to basically make the Democratic Party kind of really work to get these votes this time. Because now we can legitimately say, listen, we've got all these candidates we could go. We could go to Bill Richardson. We could go to Hillary. We could go to Obama. Don't assume just because Obama is African-American, we're all going to go to Obama. That's the kind of, I guess, you know, political maneuvering or politicking that it really is not done by grassroots people. It's done by higher-ups or political, you know, representatives who could go then to the Democratic Party and sort of, you know, cut that kind of deal. But at the same time, I've been hearing about black people being yoked to the Democratic Party for like 30 years. And my response is always that, you know, it's in a lot of cases, it's sort of, you know, dealing with the lesser of the two evils. I've never seen the Republican Party as doing a good job of presenting an alternative for most African Americans, even though they will moan and complain that black people don't know what they're doing, they should vote Republican. I don't see any policies or actual, you know, personalities coming out of the Republican Party who have ever presented a case that perhaps that's a good alternate or option for black people. So it's really the same paradigm. Black people, majority of black people will likely go Democratic. Now the idea is what can you get from the Democratic Party in return for that vote? And that's the same question that's really always been on the table.
Yeah, because political idealism is one thing, but having actual political leverage, that is something else again.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go take another call right now. Ben joins us, and Ben is in Duluth this morning. Hi, Ben. Ben? All right, we just got a click out of Ben, so we'll move quickly along, and we will go to Ettrick, where Lori joins us. Hi, Lori.
Just a couple of comments. I think that the issues themselves this time around, the big one with the war in Iraq and the support of troops, whether that means bringing them home or sending more troops to get things done, issues like that need to stand on their own, and I think they will. I don't think that Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or John Edwards, for that matter, should take any votes for granted, whether they be from the black community or women or anybody. I think that you know, the issues themselves are going to be enough, and each candidate is going to have to prove support for everything and really work to get any vote that they need.
All right, Lori, thanks for that comment. And Eugene Kane, I think that's kind of a given that any kind of candidate should work to earn any vote that they get.
Yeah, you would hope so, wouldn't you?
Well, you would. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number that you can use if you'd like to be part of the conversation. If you'd like to call us from Madison, it is 263-1890. We have some open lines for you. You can also join us by email at talk@wpr.org. And we have an email from David. He says, my take on this is that the real issue is the sheer fact that there is a choice, be it Obama or anyone, to inspire the black voters to get out and vote. If we all exercised our right to vote, regardless of who we vote for, maybe this country could actually take on. And then my producer stopped the sentence there. I think he had to take a phone call or something. But I think we get David's point. The real issue here is that there is a choice to inspire the black voters to get out and vote, to inspire a lot of people, quite frankly, beyond the black community to get out and vote. And Eugene Kane, do you think that these choices will inspire people beyond just one community or another, that it could have a larger effect on voters as a whole?
Well, if you're talking about the national election for president in 2008, certainly there's a possibility it's going to be a very historic ticket. That is what gets me excited. The idea that, you know, between Hillary, Richardson, and Obama, it could be a ticket that looks unlike any we've ever seen before. And, I mean, a ticket with a good chance of winning, as opposed to, I remember in other years, you know, with Mondale and other people who took a woman vice president and other people took lesser. I mean, it was always the person who seemed like they were going to lose who decided to do something real historic just to sort of make a statement. In this case, the winning team might be the one that's doing something historic. And I don't want to, you know, it's going to be a long campaign, so I'm not necessarily predicting anything yet. But getting back to the African-American vote with Barack Obama, I think you can't discount that if he basically continues to be a very strong and even a leading candidate, he will have the potential to galvanize the black vote much more than I think even Hillary or anybody else in the field, simply because there are a lot of black people. There are some very young black people, young black voters, who will be excited by that. And the even more significant thing is that there's a lot of older black voters who might see this as the only time in their lifetime to elect a black president. I can't imagine in the churches and in the, you know, social centers and these people who are still survivors of the actual civil rights movement, if they get behind Obama, that could really become a sort of, you know, earthquake, which I guess is why all of these politicians are taking shots at Obama and they're kind of afraid of him. That might even include Sharpton, because Sharpton understands the resonance that it would have if Obama emerges as the Democratic nominee for president.
Now, you mentioned that you had the opportunity to see Barack Obama before he announced for the presidency. And you said at that time you recognized him as a comer, and then you say that he also has the opportunity here to galvanize voters. And you've seen a lot of candidates, a lot of politicians over the years. What is it about Barack Obama that makes you think he is a comer, that he has that ability to galvanize? Is it something tangible that you can put your finger on, or does he have, you know, it, for lack of a better term?
No, that's probably what I would have said, just that it, which you can't really define and is not really restricted to any particular kind of person. I mean, it's very similar to what Bill Clinton had in terms in front of an audience. That's what impressed me. I'm always impressed by people who can stand up in front of an audience and it doesn't look like they're really reading notes or memorizing any kind of speech, but they just sort of make that visceral connection with people. And he has that. He can do that, you know, better than anybody I've seen in a long time. And when his Milwaukee appearance had been, I guess, previewed by a lot of hype, so it's really even more impressive when you hear a lot of hype about a person and they show up and they achieve or surpass the hype. So that's what he has, and I think that is clearly the Obama mania that the national press reports on and the way he has his effect on crowds and all that other stuff.
Let's go and take some more calls right now. Muhammad joins us in Madison. Hi, Muhammad.
Hi. How you doing, Kane?
How you doing?
Pretty good. I don't know if either one of you are familiar with a woman by the name of Dr. Gloria Johnson Powell. She used to be at Harvard, but she's at the University of Wisconsin now, if she's still working. And a few years ago, I heard her make a very profound statement. She said, and I don't know if she was quoting someone else, but this is what she said. She said, everyone is ethnocentric, but difference does not equal deficit. And so when, you know, and African-Americans aren't the ones who created alterity. This is kind of in response to the gentleman's concern about a black vote or a white vote. And I think Eugene responded appropriately because certainly we know that there are Caucasian people who, other than in a national election like this, they never have to consider voting for somebody African-American. That's something that we're not subject to, because, you know, only recently and for the most part, you know, have we had choices of someone being African-American. So and the other thing is we're not the ones who make it appear that we're monolithic. I've never met Eugene Kane. I've talked to him over the radio like this. But, you know, this idea that all black people are going to vote for Barack Obama, That's unrealistic. They're not. We are not all the same, and we don't all think alike. And so lastly, I read Barack Obama's, most of it got ripped off of my laptop when I first got ready to come to school, but I read Barack Obama's autobiography before he ever decided to run for president. And I got the feel from him. It was like it reminded me of when I read the autobiography of Malcolm X at the age of 17. And so he has something, and I just think it's, you know, part of him being gifted that it goes beyond just African Americans or people, you know, people of color, that everybody can recognize that a Barack Obama is a gifted person and a person who has worked hard in both in the community and in politics and deserves a shot. And I that's why I'm at this point leaning towards voting for him, but I have not made up my mind yet exactly.
Muhammad, thanks for the call. And Eugene Cain, your reaction.
No, yeah, I agree with what he's saying. I think that the bottom line for me is that, again, the Democratic Party has a chance to sort of offer a lot of attractive candidates to African-Americans. But I also think Barack Obama is the one with the most potential to, as I said, galvanize a lot of black voters simply because of he's got this image that you can project a lot of things on. Now, I think what happens with the Al Sharpton flat, Al Sharpton is old school civil rights generation who is basically looking at Obama and wondering exactly what bag he's coming out of. But like the caller said, like Muhammad said, I think if Al Sharpton discounts the fact that not all black voters want the same thing out of Barack Obama that they wanted out of Jesse and Al Sharpton, then he could be missing the boat on that. But I think a lot of that just remains to be seen. That's why I think it's going to be just a very interesting election to watch and to see how these folks line up.
And what role do you think the generation that Al Sharpton represents, those leaders, what role will they play in this? I mean, is there a relevant role that they can play?
If you're talking about the leaders as opposed to just black people who are from that generation, I mean, they will decide the election because those are the ones who actually vote the most regular. So I think that, and again, it remains to be seen whether, because clearly, see, the thing about Al Sharpton is a lot of people, and especially the white media, who's reporting it as though Al is jealous of Barack Obama and Al wants to sort of cause trouble with Barack and perhaps, you know, hold off the black vote and get concessions from Hillary. People don't understand that's the same stuff that Jesse Jackson felt when Al Sharpton started running for president. So that's not really anything new in the black community that, you know, there's somebody figures that he's the kingmaker or the one on top, and then somebody else comes up and challenges him. That's a very traditional role in black politics. So I think the interesting thing is, again, the idea that if Al Sharpton is saying, well, I don't want Barack Obama, because he's the darling of the white media right now, to assume he's going to get all these black votes. And if Hillary Clinton, who is, I think, by way of her affiliation with Bill Clinton, perhaps knows a lot about how, you know, black voters think or what they really want to see or what kind of policies you need to push. I mean, there is a chance that there can be competition for the black vote, even if Barack Obama basically takes off and blows up. That is the thing that Al was saying. Don't take it for granted. You still have to work the black vote, which I think is smart. I mean, if we turned it around and said it was conservatives fighting over the true conservative vote, which I hear a lot. Republicans seem to have this thing where they don't really have a real conservative. They don't think Giuliani's conservative enough. Some people don't think McCain's conservative enough. If you put that in terms of black voters, I mean, you'd have a lot of criticism from people saying, oh, how can you say this guy is not black enough? Or that? And that's essentially all you're saying on the political side when you're talking race. We're not really saying Barack Obama has to prove that he's black. It's just you have to prove that you understand that constituency and that you do follow through with some of the things that constituency has long supported and is in favor of.
I'm talking with Eugene Cain this hour. He is columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we're talking about primarily Barack Obama and Al Sharpton's comments last week that Obama may be taking the black community's support for granted. We'll be taking your phone calls and emails. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. In Madison, it is 263-1234. 1-800-259-1890, and we've got some open lines for you if you'd like to join in. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this week. Coming up after 9, Kathleen Dunn and her guests discuss the high turnover rate among middle school teachers who frequently don't have expertise in the subject matter they're talking about or training in understanding the adolescent mind. That's coming up after 9 o'clock this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, the topic is Who Has the Black Vote? Eugene Kane, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, joins me. And we're talking about the black vote. Barack Obama may be a darling of the Democratic Party, but Al Sharpton says he is taking the black community's support for granted. And we're talking about that. 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. And Eugene Kane, before the break, Mohammed made a reference to, I think he called it a monolithic voting block, that candidates get pegged and they've got this monolithic voting block that sort of comes along with them. And you see that, you know, whether it's women, whether it's Hispanic voters, whether it's black voters, there is this sense that all of it, you know, the pundits will say, well, they've got that vote locked up, and they sort of ignore the fact that there are individual people within those monolithic votes blocks who might have different thoughts on subjects. And I'm wondering how you feel about that, because it almost it takes the person, it takes the individual out of politics in a sense.
Yeah, it does. But again, realistically, when you look at particularly national elections, like you say, there are certain blocks that have always been considered, you know, nothing has ever been considered, you know, unusual when certain groups vote overwhelmingly for certain candidates, usually because of self-identification, whether it's a female candidate getting the majority of female votes or a Latino candidate getting the majority of Latino votes. It was only during a Joe Lieberman was vice president run a few years ago that I really realized that most studies show that the majority of Jewish Americans vote Democratic. And I never heard anything about Jewish Americans are kind of yoked to the Democratic Party and are kind of, you know, gullible because they just go with one party all the time. So the individuality of things should always be acknowledged because, I mean, I'm sure there are black people who have voted nothing but Republican for the last 30 years. There are some black people who always vote Republican. I'm sure there's probably some who voted the Communist Party all the time. But these are individuals. When we're looking at the big picture, it's always, you know, natural to look at what the largest or what segments and chunks of people do. So I'm not really necessarily bothered by that, although I do think people should think, have their own minds and don't just do it because, you know, somebody next to you is doing it.
Got an email here, and this comes in from Clintonville, and Eileen writes, Colleen writes, I think that not only does Obama have the it factor with the ability to galvanize the African-American base, but she has another huge fan in Oprah Winfrey. It may seem strange, but when she says something, people listen. And I think the fact that she is enamored by him cannot be taken for granted. I've seen the dreamy eyes she has given Obama, and if he gets the nomination, that will bring him a lot of votes. And, you know, you can't really discount that sort of factor either. People in popular culture, and Oprah Winfrey is certainly among the top tier of those folks, brings you a whole nother voting block.
Well, yeah, she's popular. I mean, but I've always kind of joked that if you really want to do the national election right, you should stage a sort of American Idol competition, because apparently more people vote for American Idol than they vote for president. So if we really want to kind of just sort of, you know, bow our heads mm-hmm. to this popularity factor, that's probably the way to elect a president, because you can go with just who has the best smile or who sings the song the best or whatever. So I don't know, Oprah Winfrey, and again, the thing I always look at is that popularity is one thing. There have been a lot of popular black candidates, minority candidates. I think something that's yet been determined in American politics is whether an overwhelming majority of white voters will actually vote for the minority the way they will tell pollsters and tell people they will. That in certain segments of the black community, there's still a skepticism, particularly when you see Barack Obama all of a sudden become the first choice for everybody. Now the key is whether or not, if in fact he can win the nomination and if in fact he could win the presidency, because that would be the real evidence
that, yeah, white people really were serious when they were talking about, you know, they had no problem with somebody like Barack Obama being president.
Let's take some more calls right now. Charlie joins us from Appleton. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning. I'm an old man. I was with Bobby Kennedy the day before he was shot. And this conversation is just unbelievable to me when I hear comments like, well, if the black voters need these concessions in order to vote. I worked for people who said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I worked for people who said, some people look at the way things are and ask why. I look at the way things should be and ask why not. I worked for people who said, I want to be judged by the content of my character, not by the color of my skin. And what I hear in this conversation is, let's judge Obama by the color of his skin, not what he's going to do for America. Let's judge Hillary by what she's going to do for women, not what she's going to do for America, not what she's going to do that is right, but what she is going to do to get elected. And that is a sorry state of affairs.
All right, Charlie, thanks for the call. And Eugene Cain, I'm not sure that that's what we were saying exactly, but I guess some people could take it that way.
I'm just talking about the reality of national politics as I see it, with the racial context that I guess I've been presented with to discuss this stuff.
Mm-hmm. It is true, though, that, you know, if you look back at, you know, some of the things John Kennedy or Martin Luther King Jr. said, that they were inspiring things that they said, but both of those people were also very pragmatic politicians in their own way. They knew how to get things done.
Well, sure. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr., I mean, he might have been the most racially motivated public, you know, servant in, you know, the history of this country. So, and again, what his dream was to one day have a situation that we might have, you know, with this presidency coming up, with the fact that, you know, there'll be minorities who will be considered for the top spot, you know, in the country. And my sense is that it's not just because they are minorities, but it will be because of the work he and others did that basically made it that they have as good a chance to do it as anybody else.
We go back to Milwaukee right now, and Joe joins us. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. Morning, Eugene. One of the issues that I'm hearing here, I've heard Obama, and I like him. I find him a bit on the light side as far as content is concerned. But the interesting thing that I'm hearing is that we're talking about race, and we're explicitly saying that race is not monolithic. On the other hand, we're saying it's clearly a factor. And what I'd like to address is the fact that all of the powerful black people that we've been talking about, Obama, Condoleezza, Colin Powell, all of these people aren't really black. I mean, what I mean by that is they're not culturally black. They didn't come up in the American streets. They're all foreigners, with the exception potentially of Condoleezza, who's got an oil tanker named after her. But they're not really culturally black, and I'm not sure how well they actually identify with what we might refer to as the black community in America. And I guess I'd just like to take a comment, get your ideas on that concept.
Eugene Cain, that's a big comment, and it's one you hear a lot of. And I don't know how you define. I'll just let you try to handle that.
Well, I think Obama has already addressed it in terms of the time he spent in Chicago, and I think in the 60-minute speech he talks about the brothers in the hood. When they see him, they know he's black. And again, this is part of the discovery process about Obama. One of the things about Obama that has been pointed out is that he has no links. He's one of these guys who, I'm a little older than him, but he was not really a child of the civil rights movement. That makes him different than a lot of other mainstream politicians, black politicians, who can always refer back to the marches they made, or even some of them actually knew Martin Luther King. So he's another generation. It's a whole new deal with him. Culturally black, I mean, if you're raised in Hawaii and you have a biracial parents and a lot of that, there are a lot of black people who at least have that biracial background. I don't know how many have been raised in Hawaii,
So clearly, I mean, there's a disconnect there between maybe if he'd been born and raised in Chicago or Philadelphia like I was or Washington, D.C. That's something that I think a lot of people, you know, will accept as that's his background. He can't manufacture a new background. That would be the worst thing for him to do, to sort of all of a sudden try to act like he is someone from the hood when he's not. I mean, there's something to be said. I think it's almost a whole nother discussion what the caller said in terms that a lot of the real standout black politicians or black public figures do have a sort of difference about them that allows some white people to see them as not being quite as black as, you know, as the black people they might deal with on a regular basis. I mean, most people, if they're honest, they will acknowledge that. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the skin coloring thing, but, I mean, there's a point of view among some black people, because Obama's so light-skinned, that he's very non-threatening to a lot of white people, and that might actually be the reason why he's so popular. So, I mean, that is in the mix. I won't dispute that. I think that's in the mix, that a lot of real popular, successful black people, there's actually been a study done that shows that a lot of light-skinned blacks are more acceptable to whites on the workplace than any place than they would, you know, someone who has darker skin. So that's a whole other, you know, thing to throw into the mix.
That's a whole nother show, actually.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It is something to throw into the mix, but it's one of those things you it would be hard to quantify until after Election Day, you know? I mean, it's one of those things where some people might answer one way in a survey, but until they go behind that curtain and push that button or make their X, you don't know how it's going to turn out.
I always go back to, and it's been a few years now, but the Tom Bradley race for governor in California, maybe more than 10 years ago now, where all the polls said that he would win in a landslide, and as it ended up, he lost, mainly because a lot of the white voters who said they had no problem with a black man being governor of California apparently lost the nerve when they went into the voting booth.
Interesting. Let's go on to Wauwatosa now, and Patty joins us. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I just have a lot of frustration listening to this conversation because I feel like, you know, first of all, Barack Obama is a front runner because he's an incredibly intelligent person. He's very inspiring as a speaker, and he has that quality. And those are the three main things. And I'm so excited that we finally have reached a point where no one really cares. Well, not no one, but people don't care that he's black. That doesn't bother people. And isn't that what we've been working for all these generations? Isn't that what the whole idea is of, you know, can we finally reach a point where we can see a person for what they are, not for their race? And so we finally get someone who happens to be black, but is all these things, and then the black community is saying, well, don't think you can take our vote for granted. Well, why wouldn't this be the perfect time to take the votes for granted? Like, wow, we really want this to happen. This is the year. This is when we all will pull together for someone who's intelligent and inspiring and black, and that's what we want.
All right, Patty, good questions. Eugene Kane, isn't that what black people want?
Well, I think I've said. I think that if Barack Obama, first of all, survives being on a campaign trail where people go into your background and dig up all kind of stuff, or if at some point he makes some kind of, you know, mistake or says the wrong thing, if he survives all that, I think he is a prime candidate to galvanize particularly black people, who young black people who think it's way past time, older black people who have been waiting for this all their lives. My sense, though, and again, what Al Sharpton is saying is that this is a very important election. We can't just throw it all on Barack Obama, because there are legitimately questions about Barack Obama's level of experience, whether or not, you know, somebody, haven't we had enough of politicians who know how to talk and know how to move people, and is that really all you need to be able to do to be president of the United States? So there's a healthy skepticism that I think has to be put into play, and I don't discount the euphoria of many in the black community that we finally have a very serious black candidate. But again, I mean, to say that, well, you shouldn't really even talk about the racial context because of the Al Sharpton story, I think we're discussing it, and I don't think there's anything necessarily scary or wrong about this. I always wonder why people, you know, want to deny that race is always going to be a part of the equation, and it's going to be a part of it this time.
And we've got time for one more call. Sam joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Sam.
I hope this is the end of racial politics. I think Obama's, like I think a couple of the last callers are saying, isn't like Al Sharpton, where he's always kind of playing like a race card. I really don't think it's about race anymore. I think it's about cash. Like the north side of Milwaukee is the poorest side of Milwaukee, and I think that's why a lot of people feel like they're stuck there. And then they see all these people like Al Sharpton and everyone saying that, oh, well, you can't go forward because you're black. You know, people are going to discriminate you. They're not going to give you a job. Well, I've never discriminated against a person looking for a job. I've actually went out of my way to try to find black employees. So I hope that this is kind of the end. I hope that Obama will go out and basically show, you know, these poor kids that it's not about race anymore. You can go out. You can get a good job. You don't have to, you know, make excuses, and you can get going. And so I don't know. I hope that this is the end of racial politics, and I hope people like Al Sharpton are gone after this.
Sam, thanks for the call. Eugene Kane, what do you think about that? Is this the end of racial politics?
Well, I think one of the things we have to look at for Barack Obama is that if, in fact, he makes his campaign about rejecting people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who a lot of white people like that caller think are bad and divisive, I think he'll ruin himself in the black community then. That is the real tricky maneuver he has to do. You can't just say you guys are in the past, because to tell the truth, Jesse Jackson has done a lot for the black community. Al Sharpton, in terms of police brutality in New York City, and even, you know, there are various other things that you can point to that he has been very, you know, successful in implementing. So that's what politics is. I mean, you need everybody on board. So he can't just reject the Al Sharptons and the Jesse Jacksons. He's got to find a way to link with them and present perhaps a new vision. But all this fact about, I mean, there are a lot of white people who don't like Al Sharpton. But believe me, I bet if you asked Barack Obama, he would be very respectful of what Al Sharpton's done, because that would be the smart political thing to do.
And it kind of needs to be said that November 2008 is a long way away, and
yeah,
a lot of things can
true.
Change. Eugene Kane, thanks for joining us this hour.
All righty. Thank you. Had a good time.
Eugene Kane, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we've been talking with him about Barack Obama and Al Sharpton's comments last week that Senator Obama may be taking the black community's support for granted. Eugene Kane, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can always check out our archives at WPR.org and listen to those again. Or if you'd like a copy of your own, you can have a CD copy by calling the radio store. And that number is 800-747-7444. Coming up after 9 o'clock this morning, stay tuned for Kathleen Dunn, and she'll be talking about education in middle schools. That's up next after 9. I'm Gene Purcell, and I've been filling in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.